Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is your official spoiler warning. If you haven't seen the Borderline music video, Madonna's Borderline, it's very easy to access. So jump on and check it out. But if you've been holding out your whole life to know what happens in that music video, might I suggest that you watch it first before listening to this podcast, because this is don't say that we didn't give you a spoiler warning, because we fucking did. We're going to give away the ending of the music video. Thank you.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg and a bucket of chicken.
Pretty little cornstarch.
My werewolf,
man.
Luigi Mario. Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where two people who should be doing things that gain them an audience instead sit and watch one thing starring John Leguizamo every week and then talk about other things and that for a little bit. I am one of those co-hosts. My name is Zachary Ruain, who you might know from... Oh my God, I got nothing, Mish.
You can do it. You can do it.
Oh,
come on.
Writing angry political tweets and then deleting them because I am not informed enough to put my opinion out there. I'm joined, as always, by Mish Witrup, who you might know from...
Who you might know from only ever tweeting one tweet a month, but it always does quite well. So yeah. I'm okay with it. I feel like if I used Twitter more often, I'd be less good at it. So the one tweet I release a month does very well. Thank you very much. And I think I'm just going to keep that kind of relationship with Twitter.
That's a good relationship with Twitter, because anything more than that, you'll hate everyone. We're joined this week, though, by a special guest. Zach worked through his social anxiety and he sent through an Instagram message and lo and behold, they said yes. I've been doing really bad introductions. I've been ashamed of some of my introductions over the last few, months. So I've written down a little list. It's not like a real one. This person has...
I can't believe you prepared this. I'm
sorry. I fucked up Tilly's so bad that I was ashamed of myself.
Yeah, you've really held on to that.
It was so bad because I listened back because I had to listen back. I don't normally listen back, and I had to listen back to that one because I slandered every single one of our university teachers at the end, so we had to cut it. But I fucked up that introduction. So tell me how this one goes. This person has performed in many roles in their 31 years. She's been a comedian, writer, actor, radio host, podcaster, and most recently, co-host of the Big Film Buffet, the New Zealand AU and NZ podcast about Netflix, AU and NZ. I fucked it. It's Jen Fricker.
Hey!
That was great. That was great.
I fucked it up.
Babe, it was amazing. Babe. No, it was accurate. Okay, here's some stuff I liked about it.
As a
professional broadcaster, okay, let's start with what worked.
Okay, great. Okay. I feel like I'm in the song break at Nova FM right now.
Oh my God. This is literally the ABC criticism model. It's literally you start with what worked. So, Zach, what do you feel worked?
I definitely made some mistakes and said New Zealand instead of Netflix.
No, worked? You have to start with what's positive.
Kept it really joyful and conversational.
Yes.
I think I made jokes where I acknowledged the mistakes in such a way that, like, it was all part of the fun and in a way that we could riff on it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that worked well.
Okay. And what do you think didn't work?
I said New Zealand. I said the name of a country instead of the stream of Netflix.
Okay.
That's a big fuck up.
I also like did a list of things you've done or that Jen has done. And then I ended on podcaster and then I was like, but most recently, and then I said hosting a podcast. I think that threw me. And then when I got thrown by that, I just stopped saying words and started saying sounds.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And what do you think you can improve on for next time?
Just confidence probably is a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just like charging through. If I make a mistake, that's okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm the work experience kid in the room.
Absolutely.
Just watching you two, just being like, okay, yep, got it. Also, I just thought then that would be the worst reality television show. Like, so you think you can be a radio presenter or something like that? So Zach's just come in for his audition.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I feel like you could potentially be the host of that show.
Do you know what I mean? Cunt on breakfast radio. Like, I don't think I could.
What was the context?
I stumbled over the word country.
Oh, that's okay.
That's fine. It's not like you went, you know,
that's like a 1950s
Prime Minister's a cunt or something
kinda.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was just me stumbling over the word country, but it was at 8 o'clock, which is in breakfast radio where you have the most listeners. Like, it was right 8:03.
Did you get complaints?
Yeah. And the thing about the ABC is you have to reply to all complaints personally.
No.
You personally do.
The manager of the station does, but you're made aware of it as well, which is crazy. So, like, honestly, have a go. If you don't like stuff on your broadcast to the ABC, just know that if you complain to the ABC, the person that you are complaining about will be aware.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. But also, who has the time to do
like, to change if that?
Yeah.
If it was 8 a.m. and I was driving to work and I heard someone accidentally say the word cunt, and for whatever reason I was offended by that, I would then have to pull over my car and send in an email.
In this day and age, there's been nothing that's happened in society over the last 2 years that's indicated to me that people like that exist. So I'm shocked.
Oh,
I'm trying to think. If I've only ever in my life ever done one written complaint, ever. Mm-hmm. And it was I feel like I can say this openly now. It was to some construction workers that we've had on
who,
our building.
Who, like, from the last week, I've heard of really good dudes.
Really
generally.
Nice guys. Yeah. Yeah, we love a tradie. And, the one of them spat on my balcony and then referred to, I'm assuming, a girl that he'd hooked up with that weekend or something as a dumb bitch or like as a bitch. So I sent in I wrote a written complaint about it. It went nowhere. I was told that my dog was annoying them. So
amazing.
What I learned from that is written complaints don't do anything. But now that I know that the ABC really does take them seriously, I plan on writing more.
Yeah, please. Mm. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if they take them seriously. They'll just tell the person.
Yeah, they'll just ruin someone's day.
Okay.
I remember I wrote a written complaint once. It's so lame, but I wrote a written complaint about to my gym back when I was going because I went to a yoga class and the girl taking the yoga class just ate muesli bars through the whole thing. And it was like, even in like the meditation part at the end, you could just hear her like crunching and like rustling papers.
That's amazing.
And it was just like, it was so distracting. And I know it's like so petty, but I was just like, I don't know.
I think it's fair.
I was just like, it's so funny to me that someone's like, okay, now put your hand down.
When I was like 12 years old, I can't believe I'm telling this story.
This is great. I love this. I don't know what's happening here.
Oh, fuck. fuck? All right. So when I was about 12 years old, I was a fat kid and my sister was like a really, really good swimmer. And I was actually pretty good because I could float. So I was a good swimmer too. But my mum suggested that while she did swimming classes, there was this circuit class for teenagers that took place at the same time. She's like, maybe you could do this circuit. I was 12. You could do this circuit class. And I was like, sure.
Like a nightmare.
Awful. I think I did it twice because the circuit person was just like, she doesn't want to be here. She doesn't want to do it. I ate a packet of Twisties while doing the circuit class.
That fucking rules.
Yeah. Like that's I had fantastic. It in like with the yeah. little bike. I had the packet of Twisties like where the little screen is on the bike. And I just ate cheese Twisties while that's I great. Did the circuit. I have not told anyone that story ever.
I love cheese Twisties so much.
Yeah, me too.
I love cheese Twisties. I don't eat them anymore because I don't eat animal products, but really angered me that there are people and quite a few people that prefer chicken Twisties because chicken Twisties to me, they taste so foul. I can't imagine why anyone would enjoy them.
Yeah.
No, you know fair. What I mean?
Yeah.
It's weird to have any product where the central color scheme is green and yellow as a food product.
What about pineapple?
Yeah, but it's got a bit of brown there breaking it up. It occurs in nature, whereas I feel like chicken Twisties, when I think of chicken or flavour or Twisties, I'm not thinking green and yellow.
No.
Here's a question.
And I feel like it's already unsettling and then you open them up and you're like, well, I should have just gotten cheese.
Because green is an odd colour. Here's a question to the both of you, and I think one that has crossed the minds of many people and listening to the John Leguizamo podcast. What flavour do you think is the furthest from its original, like from its namesake? Does that make sense?
So what flavour? I've got an answer.
Yeah. And I think that's clear enough as a question. Yeah.
I think
how about Maggi 2 minute noodles oriental flavour?
Yeah.
That's pretty fucked.
No, that's fucked and wild, but I put that in a similar place to like Blue Haven or Blue Heaven. Like that has no reference point as much as like, you know, like I'm talking about like what's the thing where the flavor has a very universal. When I hear that flavor, I know what it tastes like, but it doesn't taste like what it's named after.
Like strawberry flavor as distinct from strawberry.
So you know strawberries what I mean? When you have a strawberry milk, fruit.
Yeah, when you have a strawberry milk, you know what you're expecting, but it's not the flavor of a strawberry.
Mm. Yeah, like a strawberry milk. Yeah, the idea of like, like this milk is going to taste like a tart, acidic fruit.
Yeah.
Gross, but I know what strawberry tastes like.
Yeah, or even those banana lollies.
Yeah, that's a good one.
They're foul. They're foul, but they taste how they look, but it's not a banana. Does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying.
Are we high?
I think it's chicken flavour, though. I do think it's very distinct to Australia, but that's what made me think of it because, like, strawberry's pretty far. Like, strawberry literally is, when you think about it, the fruit is tart and the flavour is sweet. And like, but I think that really deep down, chicken flavour tastes – there's nothing like chicken.
That's true. I agree with you. Although, going back to Maggi noodles again, beef Maggi noodles don't taste like beef.
No.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't even know how I would describe beef Maggi noodles other than salty, right?
My mum used to drink a beef stock cube when she wasn't feeling well. Is
my
that
mom
fucked?
Did that too. Is now? It's bone broth now. Like I feel like it's just been repackaged and made bougier, but it's essentially bone broth.
Yeah, that's true. I used to think that was very odd. She used to get a little cube, one of those the cheap ones that come in like a tiny little thin.
Like a Gravlox or whatever. Like
Gravlox. Yeah. And she would she would drink that when she was unwell and yet would never give it to me when I was.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Okay, let's dig into that, Mish. What,
what do you think that means?
I don't know. When I was unwell, though, my mum was that mum that if I was sick, I went into my room with the lights off. Yeah. I think I need to book in a session with my therapist. I went into my room with my lights off, no television, flat lemonade and dry toast. You know what I mean? That was what I got. But when she was sick, she got to watch her Robert Redford films with her fucking beef, hot beef stock. She had different standards for herself. You're not talking about
Robert Redford there. I don't know.
He's a hot beef stock. There's something very evocative of hot beef stock and Robert Redford movies.
Yeah.
Like you could see him doing an ad for hot beef stock.
Yeah.
And it would be fucking sexy, like the early 80s or something.
Yeah.
Early 80s, like Barbara Streisand in The Way We Were, Robert Redford.
Oof.
Yeah, delicious. Yeah. That's a hot beef stock.
I'm feeling better already.
We should talk about John Leguizamo. Jen, do you know who John Leguizamo was to first hear it, or was it like one of those? Like, what's your
frame of reference
when I asked you to be on this podcast about John Leguizamo? Mm. Did you have to look him up? Like, what's your relationship with John Leguizamo?
Okay, like personal relationship.
Personal relationship.
My journey with it, if you will, is that I think he was in Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann.
Yes, he was.
And he was great in that.
Yes, he was.
Very, very good.
He played Toulouse-Lautrec in Moulin Rouge.
Yes, he did.
And then I heard him on an episode of the Conan O'Brien podcast.
We should do an episode about that. A podcast episode about John Leguizamo.
Do you know what
thing you could possibly do?
Have you found that? Because I use Spotify to listen to podcasts, and I've found that when you was like there are. And I can see it for what it is, which is just a real sneaky way to get people to listen to your podcast. But there are podcast episode recap podcasts. So then when you search for the podcast you're looking for, sometimes the first result is the recap of the podcast episode you're looking for.
Oh, that's so annoying.
Wow. It's so annoying. Like, that's so annoying.
That's crazy.
Make your own content. You know what I mean? Mm. But it's like I don't want to listen to – I don't know who the fuck these British people are talking about.
Mm.
Whatever the dumb podcast I want to listen to, I just want to listen to how
I would. I or that being Phoebe said, Bridges though,
writes her songs.
I do judge that, but I get the biggest fucking ego boner at the idea that someone would do a recap podcast about our podcast.
Yeah,
that makes me feel so famous.
Do you know what would be very funny though? In all seriousness, is to do a recap podcast about that podcast.
Of the one reviewing your podcast.
Yeah. So you just like you every week, right? This podcast you're talking about that does recaps of other podcasts. You then the next day listen to that podcast and talk about that, and then they started talking about Phoebe Bridges and their interpretation. I thought that was, I don't know. I feel like how far down that rabbit hole can you go?
I mean, I've never fully listened to one. It's always by accident. So I do wonder, like, are they critiquing or are they just simply stating what's happened, like in a way that voice description happens in movies where, like, for people who are vision impaired, sometimes you'll have a voice descriptor being like, a man wearing a suit walks into the room, like that kind of thing.
Podcasts are a very weird genre. It's very fun to be in the, like, I feel like even though it's a very established thing, we are still in that weird, like, early phase of it. Like, you know, when you watch early TV and you go, like, and they're all just like, hello and welcome to the television, you know, and it's really weird and clunky and they don't quite know what to do. I feel like we're going to listen back. I think we're still in that era of podcasts. Like, we're just the development at the end era. We're going to listen back and be like, did you know there were, like, did you know the people that hosted the podcast, you should just have a little piece of paper where they would, like, say the thing that that's sponsoring them and, like, read, the, like, and talk about their personal experiences with that product, and people will be like, oh, that's odd.
Or the flip side, where they'd be like, these people just talk to each other for 2 hours.
Like, do you think that do you think podcasting has legs? Do you think that this is, or do you think it's a phase?
Podcast. I think it has legs. Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
I think it has legs. Yeah. I don't know. I heard someone describe it as narrowcasting versus broadcasting. And I'm like, I feel like the world is big enough that I love that we got into sincere chat about podcasting.
Yeah, we don't give a shit here, man.
Unscripted, no limits.
You have not. I mean, I'm sure you've been on a few in your time that don't care about their audience, but this is the one.
But I wonder sometimes, like, do you remember like in 2012 maybe there was that big surge of YouTubers that would like take you around, like it, particularly in England, and they would take you around on their day and show you the makeup they bought, and then they'd go to Primark and buy like a lipstick from Primark and they'd show it on their YouTube. That's all like crashed and burned now and no one watches them anymore. Like what are they doing? And
I wonder, feel like they're doing TikToks now though. I think they're doing the same thing, yeah, but it's TikToks. Now limited to 30 seconds, which is wild.
I do love, there's nothing I love more than seeing seeing the transit, like seeing the people go from we are the new thing and television is, or like whatever it is, it's like that thing is over, we are the new thing, and then like seeing the whole trajectory to them trying to like awkwardly insert themselves into like 100%. Like YouTubers on TikTok when it doesn't work is like so beautiful.
Oh, it's delicious.
Oh, my favorite is when it happens so much in stand-up comedy where like dudes come through and they're like, man, like Australian entertainment's fucked and, you know, everyone sucks and it's the same five people doing the thing, and then they all get booked on an ABC comedy show and then they're like, guys, why are people being so mean about our show? I feel like it happens so much. Like they do a Melbourne Comedy Festival show, and this is not, I'm not doing this as a, like that's not Auntie Donna at all. Like I'm being like actual. But just like, you know, those dudes and they're like, I'm fucking edgy, man. I got my dick out on stage at Melbourne Comedy Festival. And then now they're like on a fucking panel show being asked what they think about, I don't know, fucking who cares. And then they're like, guys, stop bullying me on Twitter. That's my favorite arc.
Oh, it's a good arc.
It's a beautiful arc.
It's beautiful.
It really is.
It's a really good arc.
It's beautiful.
The trick with Auntie Donna is we sold out like before we were big enough.
I just feel like you never like, you like went, just skipped that part and went straight to Netflix, right? Like,
yeah, that's pretty much how it worked.
I really like the arc of Instagram influencers that now TikTok's out are trying to create TikToks where they have this like personality. So they're like, I'm more than just my Instagram photos, but they're also just kind of 30 seconds of a moving Instagram photo. But that, oh, it's delicious. There's one, I've forgotten his name, but he's gross and his TikTok's so gross. And it's just, he's just too old. It's just delicious. I'm a big TikTok fan.
Mish sends all of her friends like foul sexy man TikToks. Like,
that's, oh my god, that's my favorite.
Do you want me to start sending them to
please,
you?
Okay, please.
I will. I have a list. I have about 6 or 7 friends that every time, like, and they're fucked. Yeah. And I'll add you to the list because I just kind of mass send them out. Sometimes I send them to Zach and his partner at the same time when I know they're sitting on the couch together.
That rules.
Yeah. I'll start sending them to you. I have the most beautiful bank of fucking fucked gross cunts from TikTok.
Please. So I've only been on TikTok for a month. I don't have any desire to. Yeah. I'm not going to post anything because I just feel like I'll be like, is this a thing? Like, and then point at something. Am I doing it right, kids? Like, I don't want to do that, but I love watching them.
Yeah.
And and my algorithms just started tossing those ones up, and there's one and he's like, a lumberjack?
Oh, good.
And it's just him cutting wood. And over the course of a minute or whatever, he just takes off his shirt.
Oh, and that's it. Good.
And then there was one he did like a response video and it was someone being like, when are you going to rearrange my guts? And then it's just him eating oatmeal topless. And I'm like, I don't know what this is, but it's hot, I guess.
No. It's so funny.
I am there's other things on TikTok, but my entire algorithm is just those fucked men and women who have around about 300 likes on their posts just making fucked food. Like, hi everyone, today I'm going to do a cheesy chicken bake, and it's just some cream chicken and cheese and that's it. And it's just like, yum. Oh, disgusting. Though that's who I watch on TikTok. I'm obsessed.
I'm a big fan.
I genuinely will start sending you some.
Please. I would love that. That would be so good. Yeah. What were you going to say, Zach?
Sorry. My personal favorite is I really love when they're like an expert in like something. I like really love like real estate TikTok and I really love investment TikTok.
Yes.
And like Mish sent me one recently. What's that?
Do you follow Lords of Property on Instagram?
No.
Okay,
no.
I'll send that to you.
Please do.
It's real estate Instagram. So it's like real estate agents being like, and Australian, specific to, I would say, Port Melbourne and the Gold Coast.
Oh, good, good.
You know what I mean? So it's just like dudes just being like, time to rise and shine. Got a 2-bedroom unit on sale today.
This is Zach's job.
Oh, my God, I love it. Anyway, I interrupted you again. Sorry.
No, I love it so much. No, but that's my genre and I really love, like, I talk about this all the time. Like, every episode I talk about the ones where they do little scenes where they're like, why wouldn't you just keep all your money in the bank? It's like, yeah, well, this is the rate of this is the interest rate and how it'll go up. But what if you put it in a super fund? It's just
God.
I didn't even think of that.
Like a year 10 financial literacy assignment.
Yeah, yes. But it's always about like these guys that have it. There's nothing funnier than someone that's drunk the like billionaire Kool-Aid that like all they have to do is like game the system and they too will be
hustle
a billionaire.
King.
Yeah.
And it's like there's nothing sadder than like someone who isn't a billionaire talking about those. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what
it's
are you
fucking
doing?
Nuts.
And Mish sent me one recently of a property guy dancing and
so
telling you
funny.
What you should dancing to a trending song, like in a suit, like winking at the camera, being all sexy dancing with just text about why you should build your first home rather than buy it.
Oh, amazing. I fucking love it. So one of the central themes of the Lords of the Property Instagram is that for a while, real estate agents were really trying to recreate scenes from movies in the property that they were trying to sell, starring them. And a lot of them love to do reenactments of American Psycho, like the morning routine one. It's like, amazing. I get up, I do 100 push-ups. But, like, it's just old mate from LJ Hooker, Port Melbourne, in the apartment he's trying to sell and also completely devoid of, like, or not aware at all of the irony of a real estate agent reappropriating American Psycho to try and sell property. Like, sincerely?
I get it with a Wolf of Wall Street. I get it. But I cannot think of a film that you have to be stupider to not get the irony than American Psycho.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be so fucking stupid at your core to not pick up on the irony of American Psycho.
100%.
I went on one too many dates with a guy a few years ago. He was a chef. There's this thing, Jen, where like I went through a period of time in my life about 2 years where not intentionally, but I seem to exclusively go on 2 to 4 dates with a series of chefs in their mid-30s.
Do they like hip hop? Did you find most of them?
Oh,
like
all of them.
Yeah.
All of them.
Absolutely.
Loved hip hop.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Bit of a sneakerhead. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Like, yes. 100%. But also, like, also all kind of either just dipping their toe in being conspiracy theorists or like way into it. 100%. But also all loved the movie American Psycho. This guy, I went on about 2 or 3 dates with him and his favourite movie was American Psycho and it's exactly what you were just saying, Zach. His reasons for loving it wasn't because of the blatant irony or the kind of even humour behind it. It was because he felt like it was this really, like, deep insight look into, you know, a life that he would dream of having one day of
being. He found it aspirational.
Yes. And it's like, you absolute madman.
Yeah.
Let's go on another date. I'm very lonely.
Yeah.
But you're insane. But you're fucking insane.
in the bedroom, though.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
They all were. That's the problem.
That's the fucking problem.
That's the fucking problem.
Because American Psycho dick is good dick.
It's good dick.
I will kill you.
American Psycho brain, petrifying. Awful. Stay away from it. Awful. American Psycho dick, break my back, bitch. It's so fucking good. Anyway, Tom, we can consider cutting this bitch.
Oh, my God.
That's fantastic. That's so funny. But I mean, that's even in American Psycho. He's good at sex in American Psycho.
Exactly.
That's part of the irony.
Yeah. Because they have to be the best at everything.
100%. And also,
to a psychopathic degree.
Yeah, and they're all chefs, so they're all on a lot of stimulants.
100%. So
they're, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Yeah. Anyway. Like, I really think there's something like real estate agents, because I have a real love of, and we've talked about this before on this podcast, but I have a real love of like those $1 million listings and Sydney
shows. Yeah.
I love them so much. And there's something so funny about like how shit they are, right? But the idea of the same personality selling like a two-bedroom unit that looks exactly the same as 100,000 other two-bedroom units is so funny. Like the idea of like, I'm thinking of yourself as Patrick Bateman, not picking up on the irony, and you're selling like rental flats in.
Love that real estate agents have believe that the secret to their success is a personal brand.
Yes.
Because as someone who's rented my entire fucking life, all I want is for the real estate agent to not be a horrific cunt. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's all I want.
That's all you want.
The bar is so low. Mm. And I'm not ever going to be like, this vibe is cool. This guy's vibe's cool. Yeah, I'll pay extra. Like, I'm like, no. None of them are charming enough. I don't think 4 months at TAFE gives them the social skills to really fucking sell based off their own charisma. You know what I mean? I don't know.
It's also just like, you're so right that it's this thing of like, they're like, man, I am doing really well. I, like, you always see it on those shows. They're like, we are doing the best sales we've ever done. I am kicking it. If you put a graph of how much better of a real estate agent I am compared to a year ago next to a graph of like the rate of inflation in property prices, it would be exactly the same. But it's because I started doing videos.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, all humans as a human right need shelter, right? And so the thing that's going to make me better at giving people shelter is my TikTok videos. Like, no.
It's like, I need the house. And I'll go with the house somewhere I can get. And you are the person I need to talk to get that.
Yeah.
Please stop dancing for me.
Yeah.
Please stop dancing. I'm really stressed financially. I'm really stressed. I can't make rent. Please stop dancing.
It's every way. It's like every like direction is just like, stop it. Like, I feel like if I'm I'm a renter, right? I'm at this end. I'm like, fuck you. If I was a buyer, I'd be like, fuck. But if I was like a landlord, right? If I was in that world and I had like 12 properties and I was like, hi, I'd like you to sell this property, or I'd like you, and they're like, don't worry about it, we're gonna do this and this, you got that, champ. My pants are really tight.
Yeah.
Just be like, okay, I don't give a fuck about you. I don't care, just like,
yeah,
please put someone in my house and give me money.
If I owned like 12 properties, obviously on like a certain level of wealth that I have no relation to who I am currently, but if I had 12 properties and then this like little cunt in a cheap suit was like, yeah, just billionaire chat, yeah? Just you and me, billionaire chat on my live. How about 6 p.m. tonight? Go live with me on Instagram, bro. Just billionaire chat. I'd be like, absolutely not. Like, no, we're not the same. What is this?
Like, that's
I barely
wonderful.
Trust you to hold on to the keys to the rental property. You know what I mean? I'm like,
I'm so happy for you that your friend sent you a text when Top Man was closing and you got in and bought 5 suits.
Oh, my God.
I'm so proud of you,
but please
like leave me alone and put a renter in my property.
Yeah, please just do the job I'm paying you for.
I can't believe we've humanized landlords before we've humanized rental agents.
Like, I can't express to you. I can't express to you. Because do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? Like, it's like I'll take the bourgeois. I'll take the bourgeois over the, like, the proletariat that are, like, one day.
The bootlicker. Like, the bootlicker.
The bootlicker. Like,
yeah, because I know what a boot looks like, but I don't know what a bootlicker looks like until they tell me they lick boots.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It makes good sense.
It's anyone in, like I've worked in, you know, I've had to rent and I've worked in hospitality, and it's, like, you know, those, like, there's always those, like, movies, like your Downton Abbeys. There's, like, always that person in the downstairs part of an upstairs downstairs story that's always like, we must do everything for the Lord and Lady of the house. It is our duty. Mm. And it's like, what are you doing, cunt? Like, and it's that energy is exactly the same as, like, real estate agents and, like, like the
HR people.
HR people. Mm-hmm. There's a few in advertising. And, like, definitely, like, I feel like everyone who's worked in hospitality has had, like, a manager like that where they're just like,
there's always one manager and they always show up to, like, the shittiest. I worked in a hotel, restaurant and bar, and it was the grimmest place because the only people that stayed there, it was opposite a hospital. And so the only people that's, and also the Southern Hemisphere's biggest brothel. So the only people that stayed there were either families of people in the hospital, outpatients from the hospital, or people like just really going all in on the brothel. So it was like no one was spending any money at the bar because, or like, no one was tipping at the bar, and the food was not like, the food was for people who had other concerns. Like, no one was going to the restaurant because they wanted to have a great meal. Like, they were going to the restaurant because they were so overcome with grief because their kid's dying of cancer or something. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a shit vibe. And yet, the manager just always showing up being like, okay, let's get this bread. Like, all right, fam. Like, it's sticking inspirational, like, signs up and stuff. It's being like, we're serving a horrified and downtrodden clientele. Like, I don't think us coming out and being like, can I upsell you, is going to really change the fortunes of the hotel or the people here.
For that person whose child is dying of, like, cancer of the eyeball, and the person who spent all their money on a sex worker, I don't think they're going to.
That's very good.
Like, a lot of Leaving Las Vegas vibes as well, where they're like, I'm going to kill someone. Where they're going to spend their last 10 grand at the brothel, and then they're going to kill themselves in one of the rooms.
You've got to make sure that you bring the right cutlery with the meal.
Make sure you let them know room service is available.
If you're taking out a soup, you've got to think about it. All right, do I need a spoon? But if there's bread there, get them a knife as well.
Yeah. Always say yes, chef, in prep. It's like, the chef you're talking about is a drug dealer. Like, never, he's here to deal drugs to the clientele. He's not here to serve anyone.
Hey, guys, come on. Let's not lean in front of the guy, the Leaving Las Vegas guy. That's such a just the idea that, like, the scene, I remember that scene in Leaving Las Vegas where Nicolas Cage, right before he really, like, really went downhill, just, like, mentioned to the manager that he saw a few low staff members leaning.
It's absolutely that.
That's great.
It's absolutely that.
Mish.
Yeah.
Let's read the blurb of the music video we made Jen watch.
Okay, let me pull it up.
This is a John Leguizamo podcast. That's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, sorry. For a second there I forgot, and I was looking up the name of I was looking up the name of the chef with American Psycho dick. Anyway.
Can you send that to me after?
Absolutely.
There's a few in Sydney and they're like kind of sliding into my DMs at the moment. I'm like, I know this is going to ruin my life.
It will. I can help you. I'm a professional.
Cool.
Fuck. I'm a professional chef fucker. Anyway, here is my blurb. Firstly, let's just say that this is the first gig John Leguizamo ever got.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
That's a good gig.
Yeah. This is an honor, Jen. We have welcomed you into the John Leguizamo family. With a very precious and honoured credit for us.
So enjoy.
It's a pretty good credit, I gotta say.
You're welcome.
First gig, that's pretty good.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Madonna's song Borderline tells the story of young love. The female protagonist appeals to her male counterpart to either end their relationship or finish what he started and commit fully to their burning passion. She grows increasingly frustrated, claiming that her love interest is simply making a fool of her, playing with her heart and keeping her a prisoner, while she continues to give everything she has to what seems like a love that is not reciprocated, yet also not truly one-sided. The music video to this song is about a group of young breakdancers on the street. A photographer approaches them and starts to chat with Madonna, but her boyfriend doesn't like this, so he takes her to a rooftop so they can make out in their double denim. But then he is super rude to her and ditches her to play pool with the boys. Luckily, Madonna has become super famous off a really strange photo shoot she did with some pillars in an 80s bathroom. This makes her boyfriend regretful for being so mean, so he hits her up, and despite the fact that he was a cunt, she makes out with him anyway. But we've all been there. John Leguizamo was in this music video. I am not certain where. I thought maybe he was one of the breakdancers at the start, but then I Googled it and apparently he's a skinny dude in a red shirt outside the pool hall. It's really hard to tell. I probably could have done a bit more research into this, but there was an earthquake the other day. This music video is said to have helped launch Madonna's career into superstardom. It generated academic interest for its use of power as symbolism. According to some critics, this video helped establish Madonna's early success, and she was credited for resisting the taboo of interracial relationships within it. Johnny Legs went on to do Miami Vice after this.
Who's Johnny Legs?
Oh, John Leguizamo. Yeah. It's a guy that we do a podcast about, Jen.
Yeah.
We'll tell you about it sometime.
He's really good. He's underrated. he should have had the career Leonardo DiCaprio has had in our
straight up. Straight up. I'm not disagreeing with you.
That's
he's a hunk. He's a movie hunk.
Oh, he's an absolute babe.
Spunk.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So I'm going to launch in straight and say I really like this Madonna song. I liked it before Johnny Legs came into my life or before we started this podcast. This kind of 80s Madonna, early like her early career, is my second favorite Madonna.
What's your favorite?
My favorite Madonna is a controversial Madonna. My favorite Madonna is kind of like mid 90s Beautiful Stranger.
Oh yeah.
That's Frozen. A great
like entrance into Kabbalah Madonna.
Yes, just around that. That's my favorite Madonna. Also like music Madonna.
I love music Madonna.
And don't you ever tell me that Madonna. Like I really enjoy 90s Madonna.
Yeah.
Madonna deserves a similar level of credit as 2000s Cher.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like 90s Madonna picked up on dance music as pop music in America before most people. And then Cher did the same in the early 2000s.
What's your least favorite era of Madonna?
Noughties Madonna, 2008 Madonna.
Oh, okay.
Like the Justin Timberlake Madonna.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That would be my least favorite. In terms of the music that she was bringing out, that's probably my least favorite Madonna.
Yeah.
I really like Madonna.
When was Confessions on the Dance Floor? Is that 2000?
That was when she was sort of doing disco,
Like Hung Up. I'm hung up.
Hung
on
Up
you.
Is such a good song.
Yeah, banger.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I also really like League of Their Own Madonna.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Fabulous Madonna.
Yeah, when she was fully like tilting at being an actress.
Yeah. Very good.
She was in Don't Cry For Me Argentina, wasn't she?
Evita.
Because I remember Meryl Streep wanted that part, apparently.
Oh, get out, really?
And was really bitter and was like, I would have fucking... she was really bitter that Madonna got it. And then, yeah.
Does Streepy sing though?
Well, she was in
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia, which this whole narrative in my mind that like she was always so bitter that she didn't get Evita, that she was like, I'm going to prove it, and kept trying to be in musicals. And then Mamma Mia came along and she's like, I got to do it because I'm going to prove it. And I think she did a stellar job in Mamma Mia.
She was fine. She was fine.
I have mixed feelings about Mamma Mia only because I think I enjoyed it, but then, it's a bit dark, so feel free to cut this. I was hospitalized in a mental hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And for a couple of days, you know, whatever. We all do it.
Yeah, we've all been there.
And if we haven't, I'm giving myself a few weeks.
Look, you don't have to be crazy to be on this podcast, but it certainly helps.
Well, I'm just telling you, like any podcast you listen to, this is to the listener, any podcast you listen to, there is more than 50% medicated. Is what I would say. I very comfortably 100%. Say that. Yeah.
Anyway, and so I remember it's the first time I'd ever been in a mental health ward, and I remember all they had playing on the TV was Mamma Mia for about 12 horrible. Hours.
Oh, my God.
It's like Gitmo shit, you know? Like, that's like it, real.
Honestly, it's like imprinted on me in a way that I'm like, I have quite a visceral reaction to the imagery from it even. Like, you know when, like, some people do, like, screenshots on Instagram for, like, aesthetic or, like, a Meryl Streep. I'm on a Meryl Streep Instagram, basically, and I see it, and I'm like, I just remember, like, this being the only thing I saw for about 12 hours when I was at my absolute lowest.
Jesus.
Yeah, I had a joke about it in my show, which did not go well, obviously, which was, like, it's crazy that they – made this choice in a place that was trying to stop people from killing themselves. Anyway. But it's all been up from there.
It's all up, all up.
But you're not in there anymore.
I'm not.
That's a very strange movie. I the reason I watched that movie was because I went and saw French and Saunders live when they came to Australia, and they did a sketch about it. And you can look it up. They did it for they just played this sketch on stage, and there's a longer version of it, and it's all about the making of Mamma Mia, and it's just peak them. It's like what they do really, really well. And it's amazing because not only do they reference the movie, they also literally like take shots from and reference the making of Mamma Mia from the DVD. Like,
oh my God.
Like, it's literally that. And so I watched it and I thought it was really funny. I love that sketch so much that I then went and watched all of Mamma Mia and its 25-minute making of documentary.
Wow.
So
oh my God.
I could appreciate the sketch more.
Oh my God.
It's such a good sketch though. It's like, she does, Jennifer Saunders does Meryl Streep performing The Winner Takes It All. And it's just this.
That's
like,
funny.
Because I remember there's a moment, that's a moment where Meryl Streep is like, wow, she is acting. And then like Jennifer Saunders just breaks it down to her flapping a scarf and it's just phenomenal. It's very good.
And the director. I hope people feel that way about this podcast and Borderline and Leguizamo's working.
I love that you're such a big fan. I love that with Mamma Mia 2, when Mamma Mia 2 came out, Cher was in it. Cher was playing Meryl Streep's mother. And Cher has openly said in interviews and stuff that she did it because she was asked nicely by Meryl. But it's never like it was just like I did it because I like my friend Meryl. That's why
I've
done
nice.
It.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. It's a shit film.
I've not seen that one.
And I can say that because John Leguizamo's not in it.
Great.
So it's a shit film. I do feel like I often find myself comparing Madonna and Cher. And I don't know if it's just because they've had similar careers in terms of like
longevity.
Acting and music longevity and stuff like that. And I will say on the record that I probably am Team Cher.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I like Cher's films more, and I find that I enjoy Cher as a human a little bit more as well.
Her Twitter presence is phenomenal.
Very, very good.
I saw a tweet from her I don't know if it was from today, but someone posted it saying it was just like her being like, I blocked someone's dad. Who was it?
She's so good.
She's what's your favorite Madonna, Zach?
Favorite Madonna? That's a good question. Probably like late 80s MTV Madonna, if I were to think about it. Like the you know, just the I'm an ex-Catholic, so I'm just like a fiend for like Catholic imagery. Mm. I think there's something so like cool, like just cool, and the way she played off that, and that's like when she was doing like Jean-Paul Gaultier stuff. Like she just it was her peak, like of taking. I think pop at its best takes like high art and low art and like mushes it together into a package, and that was the peak of her. Like to be taking all of those things and making it work. So that's my favorite. Late 80s MTV Madonna.
Imagine if Madonna. Someone's favorite Madonna was the eye patch era, like the one that's just happened. It's just her like, wearing an eye patch.
It's got to be a draw, I would say, between stand up on Jimmy Fallon Madonna or bitch on Madonna Madonna.
British accent or.
Yeah. I like the Madonna that kissed Drake. That's my favorite Madonna.
Fuck, I forgot about that. Yeah, oh, she just kissed
Drake on stage. Very funny.
Oh, my God.
She's like, this is the thing with Cher. Like, I feel like Cher, is it Cher or Cher?
I say Cher.
I'm going to go with Cher. I don't mind just so long as there's consistency across the podcast. So I'm going to go with Cher if you're going with Cher.
Yes. Let's decide it now, yes.
Let's lock in Cher.
And
locked in.
I'll give you Cher if you give me Björk. Over Björk.
You say Björk?
Björk.
I say Björk, yeah.
I say Björk. Björk. And I say it like that.
Oh. Björk.
There are so many different microphones.
That's the only impression I can do. I can do two impressions. One is Björk and one is English dub of Japanese actress on Iron Chef.
Oh, These are the only two impressions.
Please do it right now. Please
do the dub of Iron Chef.
Okay, the dub of Iron Chef. So Japanese actress judge dubbed into English on Iron Chef is
This is so good. You've picked the right podcast to do this. Yeah.
I tried to do this on the radio and it was so fucking niche and we received several complaints.
Our listeners are going to love this.
Yeah.
They love what we tell them to love.
Oh, that's really tasty. I could never make that myself. That's it. That's the whole impression. So stupid.
That is the best thing I've ever heard of my life.
Funny.
That looks very hard to do.
That's it.
Can you say, wait, this is octopus or something like that? Or like something shock about an ingredient.
I would never have thought that it could taste like this.
Oh, yeah, I never thought octopus as a dessert would work.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine. You can do it. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Octopus. I've never had it in a dessert. This is so tasty. I'm so surprised by this.
Because it's also like that really literal, like low budget translation from Japanese into English where they haven't quite nailed. It's a bit inelegant.
It's one of those beautiful things about dubbing Japanese where the rhythms of the language are so different to English that then if it's inelegant, it's just like, hello, how are you?
Yeah. Yeah, try like vaguely trying to match the mouth movement, but not getting real close. Being like,
so I love that so much.
That's like, the best thing I see. We've been in lockdown for like 6 weeks, and that has made it all worth it. That
was good. Oh man! And then my Björk impression is just her being like, "I've never experienced anything quite like the drip of water of the antlers of a." I don't
I find that if you use different microphones, it changes the song. It's not a good accent, but I feel like I just do the
microphone. I feel like you drop it an octave and it's Christoph Waltz.
I think I can only do her. I think I can only do her singing. I don't think I could do her talking. I'm really bad at impressions.
Yeah, me too.
Try really doing bad. The singing. Do the singing.
It's oh so quiet.
That's great.
It's thank you.
So quiet.
Quiet. And then suddenly.
Do you know what? Do you know what? I can't do. I can't do Björk, but I can do like. Australian singer-songwriter doing Björk, like, you know, like an Australian yeah. singer-songwriter from the early 2000s.
Like a Josh Pike or something.
Just someone like that, like, was inspired by Björk but didn't quite realise that a lot of what Björk is doing is just, like, cultural. It's not, like, a personality trait. So it's like, oh, thank you so much for having me on. I wrote this song.
That's so good.
It's, I can't wait to do Splendor in the Grass. I made this song with a 40-year-old producer, and they. That's my early time.
There was a
can't
show.
I wait to open for Powderfinger at the Newcastle Stadium. I've really looked up to the guys for a long time, and this is my song. It's about falling in love.
I wrote 14 other songs that were more true to me, but all the execs and the 40-year-old producer yeah. said that maybe I should do this song, and yeah, I'd like it. I think it's good. Yeah. That's my.
You know, when I started playing out in pubs in my small town, I never dreamed that executives from Front Sony Music would tell me to wear shorter skirts, and and it's just from there, it's just been an amazing journey.
Everyone knows.
This is an attack on the execs, just to be clear to anyone listening.
Of course. There was this show that was failed called The Valleys, which was like Geordie Shaw but in Wales.
Oh.
I think it ran for like 2 seasons or something. It was a failure, but I was obsessed with it. And I used to be really good at doing their voices. So I'm gonna give it a shot.
This is the best. This is the best.
I haven't done this for like 10 years, but I'll try. So they're like, think Geordie Shaw, but Wales.
Yeah. So like, is this like okay? So like one of them's doing like a piece to camera about some shit that's just happened.
Just happened. But it was just like literally, it was all they'd just get really drunk, get naked, and they'd all have sex. That was rules. The show. It was great.
That rules.
So we're like. I thought maybe he didn't like me, so I decided I'd go and get a tattoo on me fanny. And then on my way to get the tattoo on me fanny, I saw some boys and I was like, "Eh, boys!" And I showed them me fanny. And it was so funny. And then he came on the bus and we had fuck.
We had fuck.
And we had
that
fuck.
That was fucking amazing, dude.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Oh, wow. I just haven't done that in so long.
Is this TikTok? Is this what TikTok is?
No, I don't know. But if I think I am going to make myself a TikTok. And if that's, I think maybe it'll just be about the valleys.
I
think that people will like it.
I've really leaned into reality TV and I would love to do like reality TV.
Be a, just on reality show?
Do the piece to cameras about and where they talk shit about people. And then I love at the reunions where they're like, I forgot you'd see that. So like they have real life interactions. Yeah. And then they go into another studio and, like, they're like, yeah, Zach doesn't realize what a dumb fuck I think he is. And then at the reunion, they're like, I'm so sorry that you saw that.
Reunions are, like, the most special thing. I feel like everything should have a reunion, even dramas.
Yeah.
Just like yes. I love reunions so much. Like, every show I watch now, I'm like, if it doesn't have a reunion, I'm mad. Because it's like I want to see their reaction to the thing they didn't see inside the story, like anything I watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
When characters break out of their own narrative constraints to then watch the narrative and react to it in real time is fucking genius.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
I've really become obsessed with the work of auteur Andy Cohen. Because I'm like, it's actually fucking genius. Like everything. And then with social media getting even more instantaneous. And then these women who are clearly like on some kind of crazy level, like willing to participate and understand how reality TV works enough now that they can reduce themselves to an archetype and then also respond to themselves being an archetype in a situation with a bunch of archetypes and then also be drunk. Like, it's great. Like, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, it fires all the synapses in my brain. Yeah. Where I'm like, this is just fully realized entertainment. And I fucking love
thing,
it.
Yeah. The thing I realized, I read this amazing in-depth article about, because I watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I haven't watched any of the other Real Housewives.
It's the best, yeah.
I think because they're the richest, I feel the least bad about them being.
Absolutely.
There's something about it that once you're a few seasons in, you realize that it's like a game like Survivor and it's you're watching who's going to win the game. Who, like, I read this amazing thing where they broke it down. They're like, it's like Survivor where the prize is getting another season. The prize is an ongoing contract.
Mm. Yes.
And it's about how can you insert yourself enough into the story that you continue to get the job without then having personal things exposed. That's the 100%. Game. Yeah. And that's like this when you understand it as a game, it's phenomenal.
That's very
this is why
cool.
Watching Lisa Rinna's arc over the last five years
only,
is amazing.
I've only just watched Lisa Rinna's first season.
Oh, okay, like, yeah. It's such a great journey because, like, there's this thing I've heard other people talk about where it's like Lisa Rinna is the perfect reality TV like character because she understands how TV works and therefore is a producer at the same time. So you can see her in the show producing herself.
Yeah, like just
and so the way like narrative. But the way that she approaches conflict then when she's like, I don't know why you said that. Why did you say this about the other girls? Like, and like is drunk, but not too drunk, but drunk enough to get away with being mouthy and rude to people. Sorry, this is so like,
so
never a level of depth. It's fun.
But I'm just like, it is kind of amazing when like these people become self-aware.
Yeah.
And then
on the flip side, like you were watching Lisa Rinna's first season. I don't think Eric is in it at that point. No.
No.
Okay, so Erica Giraldi, who starts in the show, and she's like, I'm rich. I married an old dude, and I'm rich, and I'm also in my 40s and becoming a pop star, and the gays love me, and, like, all I do is wear designer clothes. And then it gets to the current season where she's going through a divorce with her elderly husband who, it turns out, defrauded, like, the victims and families of like plane crash survivors, and that's
I heard where, about this.
Yeah, and so that's where a lot of her personal wealth came from. So watching it like in completion, like the full arc of her character going from, yeah, I spent $40,000 a month on glam, but that's why I married an old guy. We have a private jet. To her then in this season being like, no one knows how hard it is. No one knows how hard my life is. And, you know, everyone thinks that Tom, like, defrauded this person and, like, I'm poor now, like, while she's wearing a $500 shirt. Like, it's amazing.
There is something it's so amazing. Special about them being like, oh, my God, I'm poor now. And it's like, then sell that dress. Like, you can live for a year.
What do you
if
do?
You sell the dress you are wearing right now as you tell me.
Yeah. Like,
it's crazy. It's a crazy show.
I feel like Real Housewives is such – I've not watched Real Housewives, but I'm a reality TV fan. But I feel like it's such a commitment. I also don't know where to start because there's
Beverly
so many.
Beverly Hills season one. Like Beverly Hills, it was fully formed at that point. But you've watched more, Jen. Like, do you know more?
I would say watch Beverly Hills season 5 because it is – I think that's Lisa Rinna's first season.
Yeah,
maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's up there with maybe the last season of The Sopranos. Like it is.
Oh, wow.
Honestly, and I know that that's like a trendy like thing to be like, reality TV is just as good as like the golden, but it is. Like,
yeah.
There's stuff that happens in this season that it's just the villainry of it. Like you're just like, this is amazing to watch someone, again, who is aware of being perceived. So they're playing the part that they believe they have to in order to continue being on the show. But the depths that this person goes to, you're just like, this is amazing. Oh, it's like, it's Greek tragedy. Like, it's incredible.
It fully is. Like, it fully is like, but I feel like this is the most ludicrous thing I'm ever going to say to you, Mish. The reason that season five is so effective is because of how it builds to it over four seasons.
This like, is true.
Like
yeah.
Lisa Rinna inserting herself.
Yeah, and it's like
herself.
Sopranos in that way in, as well. In that, like, I couldn't – I'm a completionist anyway, but it's like I don't think I'd enjoy the last season of Sopranos as much if I hadn't seen the first few, right?
I get it.
So, like, yeah.
Yeah, you and need something like, to compare it to. That's how I feel about Love Island UK season five. Like, it is – Love Island UK season five, I believe it's season five, is – the best season of reality television I've ever watched in my entire life, but it's because I can compare it to Love Island Australia season two and Love Island UK season four. Mm. If I didn't have those, maybe five wouldn't shine the way it does in my heart, you know?
And it's very much like you're absolutely right. I just watched season five of Beverly Hills, and it's like it's the culmination of so many different stories. Like it's literally like so many characters like that – like it's the end point of their story, and then totally. Lisa Rinna inserts herself so tastelessly. Like she's so like
totally,
and then is very protective of her private life as well. So it's like there's this one scene where she's like just bringing up shit that she should not be bringing up, and people are just like, just drop it. She keeps bringing it up, and then someone like in response is like, "Hey, what about your person?" And she's like, "Psycho."
Oh my god, it is. One of the greatest scenes of television. It's a confrontation at a dinner in Amsterdam. And it's got my favorite line from a TV show.
Oh, what's your favorite line?
Which she says, she goes, "Beast, how dare you?" And then
Beast,
smashes,
how dare you?
Yeah, and then smashes a wine glass and throws the smashed bits of wine glass at another housewife. But so then afterwards, everyone's like blaming the woman who brought up her husband and then called her a beast. I don't know. It's amazing.
She calls him a beast. It's another
beast?
Person. It's another.
How dare you?
She goes, but, Kim, you're a beast. Good. And then she, literally her response is beast. How dare you?
Like, I wanted to make it my Instagram bio for so long. The other thing is, because Lisa Rinna works on Young and the Restless and Days of Our Lives, she's just done a season of Days of Our Lives Salem, which is a spin-off of the main Days of Our Lives franchise.
Days of Our Lives Salem? Is it about witches?
I don't know.
It's because it's Days of Our Lives is NBC, so I think they've made it for Peacock. So it's like the characters of Days of Our Lives on like a streamings of a high caliber streamings is my interpretation of it. I haven't watched it, but amazing. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
But Lisa Rinna then does a scene on Days of Our Lives Salem where it's just her reenacting key moments from her time as a housewife.
Oh my
so
God.
So she reenacts the Amsterdam dinner scene.
Stop
where
it.
She then says, "Beast, how dare you?" flips a table. It's so good. With the other housewife who is also on Days of Our Lives, I've forgotten her name. But she's like literally the only one that has a pure heart, I feel.
That's so great.
I will watch it.
Mm,
I was watching it like as a guilty pleasure because I'm not a big reality star fan. I was sort of watching it as, and I hit a moment in that season where I was just like it is high, it's camp high art. Like it's like, and it is, Andy Cohen is there with like other, like it's like high drama.
Yeah.
Like it's
amazing. And it's also like women openly, like I feel like people don't appreciate that reality TV is engineered for people to openly express their conflicts with people. Like people don't go up to someone else day to day and be like, "Hey, I heard you talking shit about me. Like, let's talk about it." Mm. Like most of the time, I feel like everyone internalizes their conflict where they're like, "Oh yeah, that person was talking shit about me, so I'm just going to avoid
them." Or like
them.
They text or something like that.
Totally.
It's just kind of like swept, yeah.
Whereas like to put that pressure on people to directly confront people who are being mean to them, I feel like is amazing and maybe something to be – this. I'm absolutely going to write a fucking think piece about it at some point where I'm like, how Real Housewives told me to like own my anger. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like you're not right. It's this idea of like it gets it halfway to like you should openly communicate, but then there's also like techniques and things and ways to communicate that they're not given those tools. It's
It's like they're not de-escalating.
No,
they're only escalating. Oh my god, the later season is great too. Sorry, has this been very boring for you, Mish?
No. Not at all. I'm enthralled. I want in on this so bad. If anything, I'm just jealous that I can't join in more.
I want to watch Real Housewives. I think it's of Salt Lake City because one of them just got busted by the FBI and like they get it on camera. And I'm this beautiful. Is amazing.
I really want to watch Real Housewives of Melbourne, but I think I don't think I can watch that until after I've watched some Beverly Hills.
You have to watch it up against Beverly Hills.
Yeah. I feel like it's the closest in like tone, honestly. But it's also very funny because the stakes are so much lower.
That's
what I love.
Yeah. It's so funny to like watch Beverly Hills, right? And then they're like, I live in a mansion in the hills of Beverly Hills, and I have I have a walk-in closet the size of a one-bedroom apartment. And then you watch Melbourne and they're like, I live in Toorak, which is basically the Beverly Hills of Melbourne.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
I live in a really nice apartment and you can step into my wardrobe. It's just like...
Chapel Street is kind of like the Broadway of Melbourne.
It's like, do you know how I know that Toorak isn't the Beverly Hills of Melbourne? Is because Beverly Hills isn't the anything of anything. That's why it's Beverly Hills.
Yeah. You have to watch, I think only one season got made of it, Real Housewives of Auckland. If you love...
Of Auckland?
Oh, yeah.
There's four people in Auckland. They just did the four people in Auckland.
They had to fly someone in from Wellington. And then that's also like a central... source of drama where they're like, oh, she's Wellington money. Like,
she dresses funny.
Like she's from Wellington. And like, one of them, I think, I just love big egos, low stakes. Yeah, it's the best. It's pure comedy. It's pure comedy.
It's always a loop around to our real estate thing of like,
yeah.
I was watching Million Dollar Listings LA and she listed a house in San Diego, and there's this one scene where they're at the races and this guy's like, come on, come let me introduce you to a table. These are the socialites of San Diego.
Oh my God.
I love anything where it's like, yeah, exactly that. It's like the highest status of Melbourne.
God, I would love to be a gatekeeper of Sydney. And you meet them appointed themselves that. Mm. But you're like, to be like that confident, to be like,
imagine.
Oh, honey, well, if you want to get far in this city, you better know what kind of wine to order when we sit down to have a lunch at the Ivy. Like, it's like, no.
It's literally like I worked at a gold class in South Yarra, so it is like almost bordering on PTSD when I work, not to diminish that actual thing, but like it's so funny to watch Beverly Hills and then literally watch people like I don't know their faces, but when I watch Real Housewives of Melbourne, I can guarantee that I have served at least one of those women a churro. At Gold Class.
I
saw one of them at Pran Market. I can't remember which one, but it was definitely while I was getting a cheese toastie. And I was just like, what is this energy? Because I'm hungover and I'm here having a cheese toastie because I've done despicable things the night before. But then this is like almost like an outing, but it's like a branding opportunity. You know what I mean? Like to view all of your... interactions in your real life as a branding opportunity for the reality show you're in.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah, no, I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with anything like, then we should wrap this up. We haven't talked about Borderline at all. This is one of the worst ones we've
done. I'm thoroughly
also one of the best podcasts.
For the impressions alone, like this is great.
But there's always like there's something so funny about like I'm obsessed with anything where like you said, status is one of the things, or money, like any scene or world where status and money are like important. When Australia tries to do that, and this is not to diminish Australia, I think Australia has a great place on the world stage, all of that shit, but we have too small of a population for anything to have enough money behind it to be.
Absolutely, yeah.
So boxing, I love Australian boxing. I love Australian pop music. Like when it's like pure pop, like it's so funny because it's just like you need millions behind this for it. Totally. Like, because it's about
We don't have the scale of population to then launch these people to a level of wealth.
No, what we expect them to do is to go overseas, get the money, get the power, get the fame, then come back here with their money, power and fame, and we can like
there are things where wealth and money and all of those stuff like happen, like there's things where like wealth is a part of it, but it's when like wealth is core to it, when it's like I will box you, like it's like I don't even care who wins the boxing fight because at the end of the day we're all walking away with $5,000.
It's like when you saw, did you guys watch Drag Race Australia?
Of course.
When the prize was like, I think $30,000.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful. It's so wonderful.
Oh, sorry. You were in it, Zach. I'm sorry. I forgot. Fuck. Sorry.
No, I don't care. No, I loved the $30,000. I was huge on the $30,000.
It was amazing.
I love it. I love it so much. And it is like Real Housewives of Melbourne is so special for that. It's like
I need to watch that. I feel like Real Housewives of Melbourne. Did you ever? Oh, I think it was on Stan. Maybe it was on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Single Wives.
No.
Oh no.
Yeah, watch that. It's nothing to do necessarily with wealth, but it's just that it's very, very, like, sorry, that's a topic for another day. We have to talk about that another time. I think that we should give Borderline, the Madonna music video from the 80s, a Leguistamo rating. Now, Jen, Leguistamos, we just haven't spoken about this music video at all. Leguistamos.
And Jen, I don't want you to blame yourself.
No, not at all. This was delicious.
I've had a great time.
Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. And if people didn't like this, I don't care. I needed this. This was great.
This world, like, you guys have lived through this week, an earthquake and a class war happening on the streets of Melbourne during a pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry if the podcast is a bit unfocused.
Anyway. We realised last week that our podcast is two Hamishes in desperate need of an Andy.
I tried to fight that I could be the Andy, but that's what Hamish would do in this situation.
Yeah. Fun.
Okay, so a Leguistamo rating is how Leguizamo-y it is. So we're not rating it in terms of like how much you enjoyed the music video. It's how Leguizamo-y it is. So for example, I'm going to give it 3 Leguistamos, and the reason I'm giving it 3 is firstly, number 1 on the IMDb list. Gotta love that. That instantly is just like on your legs, he'll always have this, and what a cool first credit. But I couldn't tell who he was at all in the music video. And I watched it four times maybe, and I couldn't really tell who he was. But he was there, like I sensed him. So because of that, 3 Leguistamos from me. Zach?
Mm-hmm. If you're one of our two to five listeners and you know who he was, let us know. In the comments of something. I believe he was out the front of the pool hall because I think there was that one close-up of him where I was like, oh, I can't really see. It's all very, like, blurry, like not like low frame rate 80s music video. Mm. And then there was, like, one close-up where I'm like, that looks like baby legs right there. Mm. You know, I think I've got to give it 3 Leguistamos as well. It would be a lower Leguistamo if it was later in his career, but the fact that I think it's a very priceless artifact in the Leguistamo study that is Leguizamarama. This is a very priceless thing. it's so wonderful to see him so early in his career. We do get that full close-up, which is, you know, better than I was expecting. And a great, like, a great little if you're a baby legs aficionado, this is a great moment. It's not as good for the baby legs fans as like a
Miami Vice.
Yeah. Miami Vice, you know, he really had something to do in Miami Vice. He doesn't have an oversized jacket, which I think is really key for very Jen. When baby legs is really singing, this was before he became sexy Luigi because he was in the Mario Brothers movie.
Yes.
He often just had really big jackets that made
massive blazers.
Really little.
Looked like a child dressing up in his father's clothing.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. Like a reverse Charlie Chaplin type of situation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely that. And that wasn't there for this. But I've got to give it 3 because it's the first. And because who knows, like, was it because of Miami Vice? Was it because of this that he went into that Miami Vice audition and felt a little more comfortable in front of the cameras?
Yeah, because he'd met Madonna.
Yeah,
isn't that cool?
True.
What an interesting. What was happening in New York City?
How did he get the gig without any other gig? Yeah.
Did he know Madonna? Like, what was the after party like for that shoot? You know, that's what I want to know.
Did they talk about in between takes?
Did she talk to him?
That's, so, you what's know. Your Leguistamo rating, Jen?
Okay. 5. And I'll tell you why.
Wow. Fuck. Okay.
Okay. First of all, this is a first gig I think is huge, right?
Mm.
To be a featured extra in a video clip of one of the biggest pop stars at that time on a music video, which is essentially like at the peak of MTV. Like when people were really watching it, you know what I mean? When it was culture defining.
This
I think
was the
already,
song as well.
Yeah.
This was the song that broke her out as well. So, yeah.
I think that's already like, that's like being featured in a Rihanna, like Fenty show, I feel. Mm. That would be the equivalent. Like culture defining art.
Yeah.
I reckon this is in it.
Like I reckon if I was in a Cardi B music video.
Yeah. Then
I would know that in 20 years' time.
People
I'm famous.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But where do the other 2 stars come from? I'll tell you. The experience of this podcast. The real...
Oh, wow. Well.
The real John Leguizamo experience for me was getting to chat to you.
Well, thanks.
It was the friends I made along the way.
What's more John Leguizamo than that?
Yeah.
Nothing. That warm feeling you get when you chuck on a VHS of Mario Brothers?
He was simply the vehicle for us to come together at this point in history.
Yeah.
When, let's be honest, we're all on our phones.
And what we really need to do is put down the phones, look up, and do a John Leguizamo podcast.
Put it down your phone.
Yeah.
Put it
Talk
down.
To your
put down your phone and pick up a copy. Pick up a copy of Ice Age. That's what I have to say.
Yeah.
Connect with your children over the voice stylings of Leguizamo.
Wear a big Hawaiian shirt and pull out your gun. And channel John Leguizamo in Romeo and Juliet today. Do it today.
Maybe you're having a little bit of trouble, you know, talking about your feelings with your dad. He's a different generation. He doesn't let out his feelings. He doesn't let out the love between a son and a father. He doesn't know how to express that. Why don't you just sit down? You don't need to talk. Sit down. Chuck on a DVD of Chef.
Yeah,
just watch.
He's phenomenal in Chef.
You might be in a situation where you've lost your job, you've lost your wife, you've lost all of your money at to sex workers at that hotel.
Yep.
DVD of Spawn. Chuck it on, and I promise you, that things will get brighter for you.
I know you're sitting here, and it's been a dark couple of years for everyone. You know, it's the fall. It's the fall of the American Empire and all of her allies, and it can be tough. It can be scary. Mm. But I got to say to you, you know, maybe you're a bit of a bigot, maybe you're the sort of person that just doesn't get all this cross-dressing and drag hoo-ha, not for you. You got pretty set ideas of gender. Why don't you just chuck on Tu Wong Fu and just, you know, laugh, cry, have a beautiful journey and realize and that, hey, if Patrick Swayze, if Blade, if the guy from Spawn are happy to get in drag and have a bit of fun, maybe it's nothing to be, maybe stop being a bigot, you know?
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Zach. Wow. Thank you so much, Jen, for joining us today. To talk about so Borderline, the music video.
Thanks so much for having me on your Real Housewives of Beverly Hills recap show.
No problems.
Cannot wait.
I did a post the other day. My thank you to you, Jen, is I did a post the other day where I did a pie graph of about where it was a reference to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and Safdie Brothers, the Uncut Gems. And I was like, I don't think this is going to do well because I don't think there's enough people. Like, both of those things are very popular properties in their own right. I don't think there's many people that are going to be, like, on board with it, both of them enough. And you were the first blue tick that liked that post.
Hell yes.
That meant a lot
Hell yes. Honestly, I love niche Safdie Brothers content. I love niche Housewives content. And I love seeing it on the timeline. I love posting on the timeline. Have I lost 5,000 followers in the last year? Yes. But do I feel like I'm expressing who I truly am now? Yes.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Now, yes. Considering you've just said then you've lost 5,000 followers, if you feel like gaining three more, feel
three,
free to promote yourself. Yeah, three.
Three.
One, two, three. If you're lucky. Feel free to promote yourself right now. What's your Gram? What's your Twitter? Where can they find you?
Do you want the unhinged rantings?
Yes.
Of a woman who has been isolated for too long? Please follow me at Jen Fricker. G instead of a J.
G.
G-N Fricker.
G-E. G-E between the N, actually. It's G and then E and then N and then Fricker, which sounds like a rude word, I know.
Thank you so much. And Zach as well, thank you for joining me on my podcast today. I would usually suggest to Tom to see us out with a bit of Madonna's Borderline, but I'm going to ask him to put on a bit of Bjork.
Now, Father.
It's pretty indicative of how far we went from the topic that we're playing Bjork at the end of a Madonna podcast.
Oh, I guess the obvious choice is It's Oh So Quiet, right?
Yes.
And I just brought in a completely different, I'm sorry.
No, I go to the mountain just to be. A little bit of a hyper ballad from someone who can't quite remember the lyrics.
I'm going to leave it up to Tom. Tom, you choose the Bjork song. Enjoy yourself. Thank you, Jen. And thank you to everyone who managed to get through to the end of this. I don't know why. Thank you.
Jen, this is the best fun I've had in a long time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
It's oh so quiet. Shh, shh. It's oh so still.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.